Blog Talk Radio.
Music isn't working again.
Who that is?
You can tell a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well, supposedly I'm playing Sherry's grandma, which is really kind of cool. And she's this young girl from Romania, and she's moving to the U.S. to become a seamstress, a costume maker in the American theater, which is so exciting.
And I have some stories that I will share in a little bit later about grandma and my Aunt Teresa and who they did stuff for, which is really cool. Janae, your turn.
Hi, I'm Janae Ray Spano. I'm playing Teresa, the older sister, and Sherry's aunt.
Great. Oh, and Ray's character, Aaron, is my great-grandfather.
Oh, you do make me feel old.
Grandfather, and I'm playing,
yes.
Narrate the story, and I'm playing my own mom, which is very touching to me because my mom just passed away, which is one of the reasons I did this. It's a tiny little thing, but it's really special to me. How did you guys feel doing it?
I just hope I got it right.
It was like stepping back into a history of a time that hopefully we will never have to see again.
Yeah.
You know, a nice little, just a small snapshot of what people had to go through back then.
It was a scary time. Luckily, part of my family did go, my dad's side of the family did go through the pogroms in Russia, but my mom's side of the family stopped coming and left before they came. And on both sides, a lot of our family stayed, and they were either killed by the Nazis or they were put into the Stalags by the Russians. So, like most people that are Jewish, the history is very difficult.
Yes.
but my my grandma was a character, and she was hilarious. And she was a chatterbox like me. And for instance, when I was a little girl, like 2 or 3, I hadn't started talking yet. And so my grandma kept bugging my mother, when's she going to talk? So when I started talking, I never stopped. And grandma said to my mom, can you please tell her to stop? And she goes, no. I don't want to. I like it.
It sounds like your grandmother should have been careful what she wished for.
Yeah.
There's this footage my dad took at a birthday party. I actually have it up on Instagram, a little bit of it. I never stop talking. My mouth is going, even when I'm eating the ice cream and stuff and talking to this lady, my mouth never stops. 5 years. My brother is in my mom's arms, so I was about 5 years old. And I'm like...
I believe it. That's why we have chatting with Sherry, so she can chat.
Yeah.
Sort of is meant to be. So what I'm going to do is I am going to play, it's only 5 minutes, and then we can talk about it, and if any of the listening audience wants to call in and ask a question or say a comment, that's nice. We'll be happy to hear. So without further ado, Mishpucha. My grandfather arranged for my mother and Aunt Teresa to lead the way to the new country. He knew both Ma and Aunt Teresa were great at sewing and would make some good money. Meanwhile, he set about to make money in Romania from the village to send the rest of my family to America. Ma was the fastest at sewing in the village, so it was imperative that she go to the new world to make as much money for the family as possible. Here's a very short reimagining of the chat before they left for New York City.
I know it will be difficult alone in a new country, but I only have enough money for 2 people, and I'm afraid that it will have to be you 2. You have the skills. You are the best seamstresses in the village.
But we do not speak the language, and we do not know a soul there.
I will give you a letter to a friend in the Yiddish theater there. You will do costumes for them by the piece and work in a factory in the daytime. You have a big family there, and I think you will find doing the costumes for the theater far more fun than the factory.
Well, how long?
However long it takes for you, Miss Pucha, to join you.
What is the Yiddish theater, Papa?
It is as it seems. It is the stories and the plays from our culture in our language. It is very popular, according to Cousin Louis.
Sounds like fun, Papa. Will we have money to live on when we get there?
Of course, of course. You will. And you will stay with our cousins. You will be fine girls, and we will all be together soon.
How would we find them? It is a big country.
You will arrive in New York City, and they will meet you and take you to where they live. A place called, Bronx?
That is a strange name.
You will see and hear many strange things when you get there.
It does sound exciting, doesn't it, Teresa?
Yes, an adventure. Well, are we brave enough?
That is the question. As Shakespeare said...
Quit quoting books. This is the real world we are entering.
I know. I can't wait. I'm willing.
Teresa?
Yes, Papa, I will go.
That is my good, brave girls. Your Mama and I will miss you both so much.
We will miss you and all our brothers, but we'll all be together soon.
Yes, God willing.
Papa, where will we be on the boat?
Second class. I do not send my girls in the steerage.
But, Papa, more of us could go in steerage. We could also become very ill. I have read the stories in the paper.
Yes, exactly, my dearest girls. I don't want you to become ill. Many young ladies have died on such a voyage. I would rather we labor here and you labor there to bring us to America than any of us suffer such an illness as I have read about in the papers.
So we go alone. It is an adventure, Teresa, and you are always saying you would like an adventure.
True, we both do. And it is for the family.
You will be well, won't you? Your Mama and I will worry so.
Yes, Papa.
For our mishpocha. L'chaim.
Not too long after, Grandpa and Uncle Morris followed. Grandpa bought all kinds of things in the city at auction and then resold them at profit. With the money he bought, he was able to bring my grandma and the rest of the family. He rented a small store, which led to the family business and the move to Rhode Island, where I was born.
That's it. What do you think?
Round of applause.
Mm.
It's always fun hearing the plays actually come together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's so short, I can play it. It's really interesting because my grandma was very adventurous. She was a reader. I didn't really know my great aunt Teresa that well, just from the stories grandma told. So it may not be completely accurate. It's from her sister, so who knows?
It's known as dramatic license.
It's a little dramatic license because it's based on stories from my grandma's one side. I mean, I did know my great aunt, but it's
right.
An older woman, you know, with children and grandchildren. So it wasn't like I knew my grandma. I didn't know her as well, so I kind of went by my grandma's stories. And she loved to tell stories.
Did she have a thick accent?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She had a very, very thick accent. And we used to tease her because she lived in Los Angeles for a very long time. From the time she moved to the time she died, it was like about 50 years or something. She still had a thick accent. And she still mispronounced names, and sometimes I actually had to look at my parents to try to figure out what she was talking about. They lived off Sepulveda, and she called it Sepulveda.
Which makes sense from being from the Romanian area because they pronounce every syllable.
And Cahuenga was, I don't even know how she pronounced it. I remember one time she pronounced that straight, and I looked at Dad because I didn't know what she said. There are a few. La Jolla was La Jolla.
A lot of people do that one.
Yeah.
I know.
That's how you tell the people aren't from San Diego.
I was working at this place, it was a health place, I was doing customer service, and this guy called in, and he said he was from La Jolla, and I was, he moved there. He didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So I'm like, So I correct him gently. I said, well, actually, it's La Jolla, sir. And he said, no, I'm from here. It's La Jolla. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow.
No, it's not.
You are really not from there. You're calling it that. But I am not going to argue with a customer. Not over that.
His fragile male ego.
It was like, you know, there's certain things. As a California native, I do know, and that was one of them, and, you know, he can't be a native. I'm sorry.
Well, we have...
he couldn't have been there very long either.
Right. Well, it's, we can tell where I'm from. We can tell where a person is from by the way they pronounce S-A-L-I-N-A.
Selena?
Say that again.
California... S-A-L-I-N-A.
Selena.
Selena.
Actually, here where I'm at, it's Selena.
Oh.
And
oh,
if you're
okay.
If you're in Arkansas, it's the Arkansas River. If you're in Kansas, it's the Arkansas River. So, yeah.
Oh.
Weird, you're funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's really language.
Digress,
is a, it's a very interesting... and delicate thing because people get very huffy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a native Oregonian. It's always fun to hear how everybody pronounces Oregon or the Willamette River or watching people fight or watching people try to find Gleason.
My mom used to make fun of the way my brother and I used to say Boston. Apparently we emphasized the in Austin too much. And I can't even say it the way she says it because she was brought up in Rhode Island and that area, so she knew that area very well. And I'm like, I can't even say it the way she says because it just it won't come off my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Boston.
I say Boston, and I guess
Boston.
That's not right from that area because my brother says it the exact same way. It's a California.
Well, I know somebody from Boston when I was in the Navy. That's how they said it.
Well, it depends, though, too. There's,
mm-hmm.
like, there's the
well,
Harvard.
Well, they're supposed to be from, actually, Boston, yeah.
And then there's the working people, Boston. But just saying the word Boston apparently is a big McGilla because my mother used to laugh every single time we said it.
Well, I was trying to think of an example, but yeah, there's words are funny. If you go ahead, I will think of it in a moment.
Okay. Well, I was going to tell you some of the people that my grandma and Aunt Teresa used to do costumes for in the Yiddish theater. They crossed over from the Yiddish theater to Broadway. So you may know them. This lady named Mary Pickford, Molly Pecan, people like that. She used to do costumes for them.
Wow.
And when they were doing stuff themselves, they bought all of their material from my great-grandfather. So... yeah, everybody used to buy material from a great-grandfather on Broadway.
That's neat.
It was weird because it was from a junk shop that, well, basically, and I some of the stuff he has, I don't know, I mean, he used to just go into these stores and buy these things and then bring it into the shop and then resell them to people coming in for fabric. And he made a lot of money. He had good taste.
Did your family ever get to work with Stella Adler?
Yeah. Yeah, she used to buy her material. She was in the Yiddish theater, but she was in Broadway. And the New York store is where all the costumes were made. It's not there anymore. It used to be called Weintraub's. And a lot of famous people used to buy from them.
Cray cray.
It was really cool. I just remember when we were little, we went to Rhode Island to visit my great uncles. And my Uncle Louie, who was named after the cousin you mentioned, he was born in America. And he took us around, and it was like a it was sort of like a big deal because everybody, the uncles were the founding fathers of this company. So when we were little, I mean, I think I was about 9 and my brother was about 6. So we were kids. And I just remember everybody going, oh, yes, sir, no, sir. And I'm like, and I'm, because to us he was Uncle Louie, and we're like, why are they acting like that? Because, you know, you act different in business than you do with your mishpucha.
It's true.
My biggest memory from that is, okay, this will tell you how little I was. I got a Wilma Flintstone chair that you, it was like a little blow-up chair, and Dave got a Fred Flintstone blow-up chair. And we got, I got Bam doll. No, Dave got a Bam Bam doll, and I got a Pebbles doll. It was a big deal, because we were big Flintstone fans.
Those were the days.
That was how we were little.
Oh, yeah, life is, there's the small things when you're a child just are so magical and big.
Yeah, I also never forgot my when we went to visit, we stayed with my Uncle Louie and my Aunt Helen, and we were trying to be very good, quiet, self-sufficient children. So I was allowed to make cereal, you know, and pour orange juice and stuff like that, as long as I wasn't near hot stuff. So I took my brother, and we went into the kitchen, and I looked everywhere. I could not find the cereal. And she had said the night before she got stuff for us, like cereal and stuff like that. So I went back, and I told my mom, and I said, Mom, we looked everywhere. We found the milk and the sugar and stuff, but we can't find the cereal. So my mom went over to their bedroom, knocked on the door. Aunt Helen came to the door, and Mom goes, where's the cereal? And she said, oh, the cereal and the bread is in the oven. And she never used her kitchen. She used the oven as storage.
Delightful.
No wonder you couldn't find it.
I know. I'm like, and when I looked at my mother, she just rolled her eyes and, okay, come on. But yeah, that was like a big lesson to me. Okay, she has never cooked anything in her whole life. I mean, she got that stuff for us. I mean, as they spent their whole time at the country club. That's all they ever did. It was weird to us. Because Grandma and Grandpa weren't like that. So it was just weird.
Yeah.
That means nobody was cooking in that kitchen.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever ate at home.
That it's funny, but it's sad.
I know.
Yeah.
Because my grandparents, normal, my Aunt Teresa and my Uncle Julius were normal. They had she cooked and everything. So did Uncle Julius. He was great. He was a great barbecuer. But for some reason, the brothers that were in Rhode Island that were running the company They acted a little differently than the rest of the family.
Yeah.
It was just those weird things. Oh, well. But anyway, that was one of my childhood memories, is the cereal in the oven.
Oh. Wow.
And the rye bread and the bagels.
I miss good bagels.
She bought that for us. I mean, she bought everything for us. I mean, she was being really sweet, but she just, she didn't usually have that sort of stuff, so she put it the only place she knew where to store it.
It was a good thing that you didn't turn the oven on.
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But it was a good thing that we came out first and not my mom. Because the first thing my mom does is put the coffee on.
That would have been
But yeah, it's just a different world. I don't even think people are like that now. I don't think so.
I am. I've got pots and pans in my oven.
Yeah. I'll throw the pots and pans in there.
Not
my food.
Yeah.
I don't cook.
My mother used to keep the skeleton in the oven.
Yeah, I keep my cast iron in there. Actually, I finally got a rack to put it on, so because I just had no space to sort. That's why I got stuck in the oven when I wasn't using the oven.
Well, I wasn't that big a cook either, but I never stored anything in the oven. I always was worried that it would catch on fire.
Well, I only store the cast iron in the oven. It doesn't matter if I turn on the oven with the cast iron.
Right.
Just don't grab it without another mitt.
Amen. Right.
So that's my little story. So what do you guys think?
Oh, I like
it. I would love to see like a part two of them reuniting, like in the United States or something.
Yeah, because they didn't live, you know where they lived in New York? They lived near where Fanny Bryce's mother's bar was. That's about a block away.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's the area. And then they lived there, and then they moved to Bronx. And then they moved to Rhode Island, which is totally different. But it's closer to the, Rhode Island was much closer to the life, the kind of climate and everything that they were used to in Romania than New York. New York was, climate-wise and stuff, wasn't what they were used to.
I know. Cold winters and stuff?
Huh?
Was it too cold in the wintertime, or was it always cold in Romania?
It was cold. It was really cold. But they had snow. I mean, it was very cold. But it was just, I don't know. It was more rural. And Rhode Island's more rural. And, well, it's gotten much more cosmopolitan than it was, but at that time when they lived there in the early 1900s, it was much more rural. I mean, Rhode Island has changed a lot. Providence, from what I understand, my mom grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. When we came back to visit, when we were the age I was just telling you about, my mom was amazed at how big everything was. She said, everything is so much smaller. When I was a kid, everything was so much bigger.
That happens too. But yeah, I know. Anytime you're anytime you leave a place you're from and you're gone long enough, it's almost a culture shock going back, because things continue to change when you're gone, and things aren't the same when you return. It's
so true.
Yeah.
It's very true. It's true, and I noticed that when I go home to L.A., and then I haven't been gone that far. I've only been gone 4 or 5 years, and every time I go, there's something missing that I know. It's just, because L.A. changed for anybody who's around the world who's never been to Los Angeles. L.A. doesn't know what it means to eat stuff. It changes all the time. But, I mean, the valley, San Fernando Valley I grew up in is not the San Fernando Valley that's there now. But when you're living there, it's not a big deal because you see it happening. But when you go
It changes slowly. When you're in the middle of it, it changes slowly. When you're gone, you come back to, well, where did that, what's that? And it's like all of a sudden you're going down the streets and you don't recognize everything.
That's what it was. It was like a lot of stuff was gone. Uh-huh. I mean, the parks and stuff was all there, but the a lot of the businesses I loved were gone. Like a lot of the stores and the restaurants, all gone. I was like so depressed.
Mhm. It's progress.
Progress. Not that's what they call it.
Not necessarily. But that's what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call it. So the next part I wanted to ask you guys was it weird to do something that you knew was part of my family history? Since you know me?
No, actually, I was quite honored to be asked.
Me too. Okay. It really informs the work, I think, knowing all that backstory.
The honor of being part of this is helping you to relive something that you had only heard about.
Yeah.
And that's the honor. It's creating a time and a place and a feeling. The Aaron is sending his family off, his daughters off to he doesn't know where, and he's doesn't know what, and he's torn. And that honor is, I hope that I helped create that illusion for you.
You did. I loved your rendition of my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather was really a very interesting man. He was very, in some ways he was very progressive, and in other ways he was very old-fashioned. He was very religious, but he was very, he went against it sometimes. He was a very interesting, complex person. So, and you brought that to it, which I really appreciate.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've done several shows in which I have played real-life people, but most of the time it's a historical reenactment, and this was an opportunity to play someone that I had personal knowledge of. That person who had actually, you didn't know him, but you knew the stories better because you were firsthand in listening to them.
Yeah.
And that helped make it real.
Yeah, I never met him. He died long before I was born. But he was something else. Like, he was very, very religious, very religious Jew. And on Yom Kippur, I don't know if you know this, but when you go to temple on Yom Kippur, you're not supposed to have money in your pocket. You're not supposed to have lights on. It's really very strict. Well, Grandpa kind of, great-grandpa kind of broke that. He used to bring money for the kids. He didn't want them to fast. He didn't think it was healthy for children. He'd give them all money and say, go to the soda shop. Soda shops back then, you can get, like, cheeseburger, hamburger, well, not cheeseburger, a hamburger, hot dog. A soda shop wasn't like a soda shop now. It's more like a,
we had a real one in Gresham where I grew up, where it had the lunch counter.
It was like that. And so he gave them money. So it was totally against the religion. He gave them all money and said, go get some lunch. You shouldn't starve. That was the kind of guy he was.
I think that's great.
My kind of man.
I thought it was super. Yeah. He was really, really funny about stuff like that. My mom loved him. She adored him. She just thought he was great. And she goes, there was part of him that was very strict, very old world, and then there was part of him that was a little fun and crazy and silly, and that was one of her favorite things. She knew that she was going to get money from him to get food. And all the kids did. Grandkids did. And I thought, I like that. I like the complexity of it. I love that he's going to go and he's going to fast, but he didn't want his grandchildren to get sick. I thought it was beautiful.
He was a good grandfather.
Yeah. And that was from my mom. That wasn't from my grandma. That was a story from my mom. She loved to tell that. She used to tell that quite often. That was one of her favorites about him. But he's a very simple, cool guy. So, and I showed you pictures of him. He was cute.
Yes.
So you like him, huh, Ray?
I like him. He's the type of person that would be great for a conversation.
Oh, he was. From what my mom said, he was really smart. And he used to tell great stories. I guess that's where I get a lot of it from. My dad wrote stories that were like science fiction, and my mom loved movies and was an expert at it. But apparently Grandpa was a storyteller. My great-grandpa was the storyteller. So it's just, I guess it all comes down to through heredity. Little bits of me.
Yes.
What did you think of playing my grandmother, Maria, as she was called in Romania?
I know my accent wasn't nearly as thick, I'm sure, but I hope somehow that you were able to hear your grandma again a little bit in reenacting her.
It was really good, actually. I loved the way you talked. It was actually reminded me in some ways very much of her. She was full of adventure and excitement and loved to read and full of stories, and that's just the way you performed it, and that's just what I wanted.
Oh, I'm glad. Yay. I did my job.
Did you like her?
I did. She reminds me a lot of me, too, you know. I've always been an adventurous sort and into stories and books. So.
My grandma would read anything. I told you this privately. My grandma would read anything. I mean anything. Back in the old days when she first moved to follow her kids who all came to California, the banks used to give books. Gas stations used to give green stamps and prizes. The world was a different place back in the 50s. She used to go to the bank and get piles of books, apparently. And then when I would go over to, when I was about 15 or 16, I would say, especially during the summer when I didn't have books, I had to study for school. I'd say, Grandma, you have any books that I could borrow? Oh no, there's a box over there. Just take what you want. It's okay. You go through it, and I threw a book at my brother because it was about sports. She had books about anything that she could read, she would read. It was amazing.
I love that. My dad's kind of like that. He has a huge library.
Yeah.
And, like, I would always just browse and find new things every time I'd look at it. It was cool.
Yeah, my dad used to get the same book a couple of times because he couldn't find it. He would go in and he would buy another paperback.
Yeah, that's true, too, yeah. You'd forget that you have a copy already.
I think he had like 3 copies of Foundation from my
Scouts.
Oh. And I can't find it. And you go to Dalton's, and that's another thing that's gone, books, independent bookstores and stuff. But he would go and buy another one. And one day when they were older, my dad was having a real hard time finding stuff. So I said, okay, let me go through your books, and I'll just, you know, make them in at least an order where they're all authors are together. And I found 3 Ender Games, 2 Da Vinci Codes. I mean, it was amazing. The man had copies of all his favorite books.
He could run a bookshop, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I actually gave, when my father passed away, I actually gave some of those copies to the library.
I'm sure they appreciated that.
Yes, well, I kept the hardcover for myself, and I gave them the paperbacks.
Of course.
Well, my library is stacked here beside me, and it's I can only imagine what your grandmother had as a librarian.
Oh yeah,
because I know what I've got.
I think every family member in my family of the older generation were book people. I mean, they all had books. That's why it's so weird to me that people don't read today. I don't even understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Danae, did you enjoy playing my Aunt Teresa, my great Aunt Teresa?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
What did you think of her?
She seemed to be the more reserved or cautious one. But obviously, she... the way it was written, she was the more cautious one, but invested in doing what was needed for the family. So,
well,
I bet
she
was a very interesting person.
I created
that. Of course,
that's
based on what you had, yet. Right? But that's what I had to work with. But
I had to have some kind of conflict. So that was it. Part of theater is conflict, and that was the conflict. She was just as adventurous as Grandma. So they were pretty much alike. That's why they fought a lot, because they were definitely sisters. They actually looked like, even though they were different ages, they kind of, if you saw pictures of them together, they kind of looked like twins. They both have red hair, flashing eyes. Very pretty.
What was their age difference?
A couple of years. Like 1 or 2 years. I don't remember exactly.
No.
But,
so fairly close in age.
They were very close in age, yeah. But they fought over clothes and books and... arguments about something that was said and something about the kids or the grandkids or God knows. I mean, it's normal sisters. I actually never had a sister, but from what I understand, they had a very normal sister and sister relationship. Especially they're right in the middle of the brothers, so they, the two of them could get away with murder.
So how many brothers were there?
I always get confused. Hold on, let me figure it out. There's Uncle Seymour, Uncle Louis, Uncle Henry, and there's one more that's Uncle Morris. And then there's Uncle Morris, and then there's the brother-in-law, Julius. So the brothers, there's four, and the brother-in-law makes five.
Okay.
I mean, that's a normal family for that period.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Big families, that was pretty much normal for Europe, especially Eastern
yes.
Europe.
Well, I think that was pretty well normal for the time.
Yeah,
pretty
exactly.
real normal, yeah, because both my grandparents on my dad's side both came from families where they were both one of eight.
Yeah, my grandma was number eight of ten.
Well,
yeah, my grandfather was eight of eight, and my grandmother, I think, she had one younger sister who passed away, and then her younger sister, so she was like, I guess, number six.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, there was altogether six in that family. So actually, it was kind of light from what you were just saying.
Yeah. My grandfather's family came from Odessa, Ukraine. They were ethnic German. So they fled just ahead of the Bolsheviks.
Yeah.
And that one.
That's what my mother's side and my father's mother and father's side family both had that little Bolshevik and also Tsarist problem too. the Tsar is what were you going to say, Ray?
Oh, I was going to say that I almost feel deprived. My father was an only child. My mother had four sisters and a brother. But my paternal grandfather had something like six brothers and two sisters, and we are all follically challenged, and I got it from them. That I'm going off on another subject, but I almost feel deprived not having large families like that.
Well, the thing is, I think once these people reach the 20th century and the next generation, because my grandparents had three children. My Aunt Teresa had two children. I mean, none of the family had. Uncle Louis had one son, and Uncle Henry had one son. I mean, there wasn't it wasn't humongous like this.
Right.
You know.
Families got smaller because
families definitely got smaller.
Right. Because early on, it was they needed the children to help with the work. You didn't have the hired hand. I'm in the farming community. You didn't have a hired man. You had your family that was out doing the work. None of my grandfather's siblings or my grandfather graduated from high school. Eighth grade education was all they had. My father, on the other hand, was the first one of the family to go to college and graduated. So it was just time. It was the time that they grew up in, the time that they lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we find it strange, and but even now, where I'm at, the families there aren't large families. What is a Volga German community, and they still believe in big families.
But I just think that times have changed. It's harder to take care of a large family than then it was necessary for the family to take care of each other. Today, it's much with financially and educationally and stuff like that to have a large family.
And urbanly, people tend to start scaling down in an urban area compared to a rural area. So, So it depends on that. And in some cases, you know, for some people, it's more of a religious thing too. But yeah, we've definitely, on average, have scaled down.
We're coming to the end. Do you guys have any final comments about Mishpucha?
L'chaim.
L'chaim.
That's all I have to say.
I echo Ariel. I mean, in fact, I even remember asking you when I first got the script if you had ever planned on doing anything else. It would be fun to see you to try to figure out some of the other stories and bring the characters, you know, in dramatic license, bring your family characters to life for to share the stories.
It would be interesting. Yeah. I actually was thinking about doing it. Would you guys want to capture your parts if I did it?
Sure.
Yeah.
I like that this one was quick and easy.
Family histories are more important, sometimes, than fiction stories. And
yeah, especially when it's way.
Family histories have more of a way of showing how people actually lived, where histories tend to show you just the bigger picture of what happened. And there's a lot to be said for what people have actually went through compared to just the important historical figures that we'd like to bet you on. It's important to also know the stories of the people that weren't in charge of everything. Yeah. The average person.
I agree. I had a very selfish reason. My mom had just passed, and my mom and my grandma, my grandma used to tell stories, and my brother and I were and my mom and my dad were the only ones to listen. So I kind of felt sort of an obligation. Not just an obligation, a need, a desire to keep the family history alive.
To share it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the birth of Mishpucha.
That's true.
That's the birth of the family. I want to thank you all for taking part. I want to thank you all for coming on the show and being part of Sherry's Playhouse, because you've all been part for quite a while. I really thank you from the bottom of my heart. You're all very special people, and I really, really appreciate each and every one of you.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate you, Cher.
Yeah. Thank you.
Fun.
So
I love the opportunities you give us.
Thank you. I'm going to end this on a very jolly note of wonderful music. So instead of my usual music, we'll end on the Mishpucha music. Thank you. Thank you for chatting, Sherry.